Good morning. So, today we're going to continue talking about the precepts. We're on the third of the prohibitory precepts, which is do not misuse sexuality. So, the precepts are, one way to say is, I resolve not to misuse sexuality, but to remain faithful in relationships. That's one translation. Another one is, that we're going to use during the Bodhisattva ceremony today. Let the three wheels of self, objects, and action be pure, with nothing to desire. One goes along together with the Buddhas. So I'll talk about that at the end of the lecture. You know, I thought I'd start out by giving you an example of misusing sexuality. My brother, who is dead now, died when he was around 70. At the end of his life, he was feeling really lonely and wanting to be in relationship. And also sex meant a lot to him as well. So he ended up meeting a woman online that he fell in love with and got married to. The problem was that she was one of those people who she and her ex-boyfriend, her ex-husband, they actually preyed on elderly men, and she would get in relationships with them and marry them and then kind of extort them for things and cease to be a partner for this person. And that's what happened to my brother. He mortgaged his house, which was not a terrible thing, and he was financially had enough money to do okay even under that circumstance. And he bought her a whole lot of things that she wanted with the $300,000 that he got from by mortgaging his house. So here's an example of misusing sexuality. I think it's an example kind of in two ways from both sides. One, of course, is that it's just morally reprehensible to prey on people through one's through sexuality, to prey on people's loneliness and engage in this kind of activity. And this, I think, is a somewhat extreme example, because I'm assuming that absolutely none of you are going to engage in that kind of a scam. And if you are, I think you need to practice very hard. On the other side of it is my brother, who is not Buddhist. Clearly he was struggling, though, on his side with facing, dealing with his ability to live with the loneliness that he felt, to kind of cope with the karma of his life. So there's that side of it too, as practitioners, in ways that we become vulnerable in certain ways to being preyed upon, because we're not able to really face our lives. So I think part of Buddhist practice is, in a wholesome way, not in a violent way towards the self, but to face our lives and to work with the difficulties that we have to find a wholesome way to work with our problems. So I think that that is a lot of what we're doing as practitioners, or part of what we're doing as practitioners. So it kind of works both ways, that we learn how to take care of ourselves better. We learn how to be in accord with our problems in a way that we actually don't push them away, that we're willing to look at them and find wholesome solutions for the things that are problematic for us. I think my brother was feeling that he had found a wholesome solution. I'm sure there were many red flags. I didn't know this woman, but other people who did said, one person said, this person is a gold digger, before he married her. Now, he did get a divorce, which was good, because when he died, she did not get his estate. So, I mean, this has got worked out, but I just want to say this is like an example of a kind of example of misusing sexuality. Sometimes when we're younger and we're kind of getting into that, you know, space of dating and all of those things, you know, we end up in these relationships that are not particularly wholesome. In some ways, these relationships are more kind of equal in their power structure because we're young. Everybody's young who's involved in it, and everybody's kind of floundering around trying to figure out what they're supposed to do. Sometimes people get in relationships where they absolutely know that this person is not their partner. They know that this person is not the person it's an unequal relationship in the sense that you're leading the person on. They are clearly more needing something more from you, more engaged with you than you are with them. And so in a way, that's a kind of dishonesty. That's a kind of misuse of sexuality. So here are kind of two examples to think about. One, I think, more subtle. The second one, I think, is more subtle than the first one. There are other ways in which we clearly, you know, we can all see misusing sexuality. For example, the doctor in Santa Cruz, everybody's probably heard the story about the doctor and a couple of nurses that worked with him who were sexually abusing children. There's no ambiguity, I think, in that situation. There's nothing subtle about that. There's nothing ambiguous about that as a misuse of sexuality. In the Bodhisattva path, which is what we're engaged in Mahayana Buddhism, we don't talk about celibacy so much. We talk about misusing sexuality. So in there are many Buddhist traditions where people who are ordained are celibate. Chinese Zen, for one, most of the monks and nuns are celibate. That's also true of Korean Zen schools of Buddhism. In Vietnam and Southeast Asian schools, people who are ordained are usually celibate. In Theravadan traditions, which is the kind of there are three mainstreams of Buddhism. There's Theravadan Buddhism, which means Buddhism of the elders. So it's a Buddhism that's more based on teachings that are thought to be authentically Shakyamuni Buddhist teachings. There's Mahayana Buddhism that was developed about a millennia after the Buddha died, came out, and that's a teaching that's really more based on this doctrine of non-duality. I don't want to go into some big thing here. And the third one is Vajrayana, which is usually associated with Tibetan schools as the more esoteric. So our Japanese ordination, the Jaku and I have in Japan, during Meiji Restoration, Meiji period I think is around 1800s. In the Meiji Restoration in 1889, the government of the Religious Affairs Office legalized marriage, eating meat, drinking, as in alcohol, and wearing kind of civilian clothes when you're not on duty, right, as doing your priestly duties, when you're not engaged in formal practice. So there are very various reasons for why this happened in Japan. A lot of it was political. Japan's a country for many, many, many years, like many countries are, and actually I would say our country too has some issues around this, but where the government, this is not true in the United States, but where the government actually was very, very, very much involved in the religious schools and how they did ordinations and all these kinds of things. So for various reasons, the government decided to legalize this. So we don't have an ordination. Jaku and I do not have an ordination, nor do... I think there's one school, Zen school in the United States, that's Soto Zen, and that's Shasta Abbey up in Shasta. They have a celibate ordination for Soto Zen priests, but for the most part, that's not part of our tradition. So anyway, that's kind of a little bit of a background. So our Bodhisattva precepts are not misusing sexuality. I kind of made a list here of misusing sexuality. I already mentioned child pornography, abuse. Rape is a misuse of sexuality. That's a violent kind of predator behavior. Sexual favors and manipulation is a misuse of sexuality. Flirting to gain something from the other person is a misuse of sexuality. So that's something that we all might have engaged in at various points in our life. Feeling possessive of the other, stalking and harassing someone, So that's a misuse of sexuality. Jealousy, so when people are in relationships where one partner is really jealous of and doesn't want the other person to do things without them, that kind of thing, that's a misuse of sexuality. Dressing inappropriately for a situation. This is a really touchy one for women, I think. You know, because this kind of blends over into that. Well, if you hadn't been in a dark alley, you know, this wouldn't have happened to you. But there is a way that there are appropriate ways to dress and not dress, not maybe be distracting in a certain way. So that's something to think about. I mean, the thing about it is, some of these are like, there's no ambiguity about it being a misuse of sexuality. Some other ones are, really, it's discerning the situation. So it's not a hard and fast rule. Sex is not about power, it's an expression of mutual engagement. I think that's a fundamental aspect of this, is that it's not about a hierarchical power relationship. So any kind of activity where you start to see the other person as an object for you. I think sexuality, this is something that we can see, like we're talking about pornography, then the person that is the object of your sexual fantasies or whatever is an object. It's not a real person. So there's no empathy for that person. There's no sense of connection that this person is the same as you. That's the basis of this. I went online and I looked up the word love, because often I think we're confused about what is love. And again, this is kind of one of these things that it's hard to discern. We're talking about sexuality here. If we're talking about just sex, you know, the energy around sexual energy, that is so super powerful, right? It's like a really powerful energy. So there's that, and that kind of drives a lot of this notion of misuse of sexuality is driven by this. So here's the definition of love. This, I looked this up online. A deep, tender, ineffable feeling of affection and solicitude towards a person, such as that arising from kinship, recognition of attractive qualities, or a sense of underlying oneness. I think that's a pretty good definition.
Chandra, would you read that again?
A deep, tender, ineffable feeling of affection and solicitude towards a person, such as that arising from kinship. So there's this way we're talking about love of kin, relatives, or connection. Recognition of attractive qualities or a sense of underlying oneness. So that's the first definition that comes up. The second one is a feeling of intense desire and attraction towards a person with whom one is disposed to make a pair.
Read that one again.
Well, there's more. The emotion of sex and romance. A feeling of intense desire and attraction towards a person with whom one is disposed to make a pair. The emotion of sex and romance. So that's number two. Number three is sexual passion. Okay. Now I added number four, which has to do with obsession, grasping, hoarding, needing not just people but also things as well. So there's this way in which we, probably not sexually, but this kind of greed factor. There's a greed that goes around this issue of sexuality. So this kind of grasping and hoarding and wanting to objectify and make the other person the other. So it's important for us, I think, you know, to think about that in relationship to sexuality. Am I falling into that? Is this part of the mix of what's going on? You know, how do I find my stability and keep my equanimity in the midst of that? So that's part of the practice of working with this. Practicing is taking responsibility for our own feelings, right? That we're not, and sometimes this is hard because of our past karma. This is true in general about Buddhism. our past karma makes it really difficult sometimes to take responsibility for what we're up to, because responsibility in our minds is kind of a beating ourselves up. We think responsibility means I'm a bad person, so I should get a grip somehow, and this is all my fault kind of feeling. And I'm just making this as a general comment now about how we relate to the problems that we have. If when we say take responsibility, that's not what that means. To take responsibility for the issues that we're having doesn't mean now I have to beat myself up. It's easier to think about it as this situation is not workable. What can I do to work with this? Or I'm suffering. How can I work with this? Because ultimately, when we're suffering, we are the only ones who can fix that suffering. Because what we're talking about, I mean, we can go, I'm not saying we shouldn't go to therapy, because I think that's great, or we do anything that we can do to work with our suffering. It's kind of like when you go to physical therapy, and you go to physical therapy and you do the exercises with the physical therapist, and then they say to you, now I want you to go home and I want you to do this 3 times a day, right? Or I want you to do this once a day or whatever. So you go home, you tack up the sheet of paper, and you don't ever do the exercises, right? So it's like that. So it's like you can go to the physical therapist, but they can't wave a magic wand and make whatever the problem is go away. You have to participate in this. And that's that responsibility of what I say, you know, you're the only one who can make that change. It's like, we're the only ones who can do that. The physical therapist can't get in our body, you know, and do this for us. Like, okay, do they have to get in everybody's mind, who's my client, and get them to do these exercises, you know? It doesn't work that way. So there's this way where we take responsibility. We say, okay, I am responsible for the way I feel. And again, this isn't beating ourselves up, because how we are and the things that trap us and the things that catch us are have to do with the kind of totality of the karma of our life, right? The totality of all the experiences that we've had in our life. Some of them we don't even kind of cognize. It's like we can't really bring them forth in a way, but they are affecting what's happening for us. So when we're in relationship, I think it's important, especially if we're suffering, it's important to look at this and ask ourselves, is there a power imbalance here? Is there something that's going on that is not particularly helpful here? Is there some way in which I'm caught by my own desires that are separate from what's actually happening here? So a way of kind of asking yourself those questions. Jocko and I have been in a relationship for 30 years. So we have arguments. We have disagreements about things. So I'm not saying that you're never going to have an argument or disagreement. I'm not saying that it's going to be like everything's going to be, you know.
Explains it well.
But there is this reciprocity. There is this way in which it's about being partners. This is the way in which it's about walking together through these issues and being honest with each other. So we take responsibility for our feelings and the passions that we have. We practice with acknowledging our need for physical intimacy, that's part of our lives. That's part of being a human being. Human beings are tribal, for the most part. We are not solo entities. From a Buddhist perspective, we're not solo entities, period. Kaputsky, end of story. It's just not how the world works. The world works in this interconnected, intermeshing relationship. Again, this agreement to practice, this commitment to practice, this taking on a responsibility to practice with the things that are going on in our lives. And also, you know, the more we practice, the more we're able to really discern whether or not there's a misuse of sexuality in something that's a subtle situation. We're able to call upon a kind of honesty. We're able to say to the other person, you know, these are my boundaries. This is what I believe is the honesty in this relationship, and that has to be happening here. So we're able to wake up to that and to see that. Again, I think it's much harder. I remember when I was younger, sexual relationships seemed much harder. Like, it just seemed like it was, I just wasn't as self-aware. But I think it's really possible for all of us to get caught in this, to all of us kind of fall down the rabbit hole. So this way that we pay attention to this. Some situations, you know, it's like I've mentioned this thing about the doctor who's abusing the patients, but just any of these kind of hierarchical relationships that we end up in. A hierarchical relationship where, and the funny thing is, just to say as a caveat, these hierarchical relationships, sometimes they work out great, right? You know, we hear about people who fall in love with their college professor and they're still together 40 years later, and this is the love of their life. So I'm not saying in every situation like this that it can't be. Although I would say that adults and children, those kind of hierarchical relationships are absolutely not acceptable. Also, I think student-teacher relationships in the context of a religious practice, in the context of a spiritual practice, are absolutely not workable. I think if you're going to do that, you'd have to split up and not see each other and not be student-teacher relationship and just give a lot of space in there to see. So there's this way, I think we should always be concerned about unequal hierarchical situations when we get involved in a relationship with people that are intimate relationships in this way. If it's a way in which we think that person is better than we are, right? Where we don't feel equal to that person. I think that's another example, more subtle example of a hierarchical relationship that we need to pay attention to, that we should want to pay attention to. So mainly it has to do with unequal, I think unequal power, unequal relationships in that way. I think that's what leads to a misuse of sexuality. All of this is based on, from a Buddhist point of view, all of this is based on the certain ways that we talk about our interconnected relationships. So, for example, this is a list that I found, and to be honest, at this point, I looked this up a while ago, I don't remember the source of this, but I thought this was interesting. The state of maintaining one's own place. So this way in which we remember our particularity in relationship, that we have our intrinsic value separately as a person, separately from the other person, that we have to pay attention to that we have to honor ourselves, that we have to ask ourselves, is this wholesome for us? Is this a relationship that's just about my desire for it to be a certain way, or my desire for a fantasy that I have about what would be the perfect relationship? So this way in which we understand, we do not negate the fact that we are particular people. Being maintained by another's place. So at the same time, are in maybe a different kind of situation, we realize that the other person, we are also dependent upon the other person. So if I'm in a relationship, I hold the fact that I am an individual with my own needs and issues, yet simultaneously, I'm dependent upon others. Simultaneously, I'm also in relationship. So it's not just one-sided. It's not all about me. Oh, I'm sorry, this is about me. But it's also about us, right? So there's this simultaneity of looking at both of those sides. Plus, we're responsible for what's called here is says maintaining the other's place. So we are have this responsive supportive relationship simultaneously. So we're being asked to hold a bunch of things here at the same time. We're being asked to hold our own particularity, our own needs, our own boundaries, what's wholesome for us. Also be aware of the fact that that's not, that we're in relationship, and so in that way, we're in this reciprocity with the other person. And at the same time, there's this supportive aspect to it as well in the reciprocity. I think maintaining the other's place in a more global sense is that what we do, the things that we do, make a difference in the totality of our world. And then also, moving back and forth between all of these things as it applies to the situation. So in some moment, in some moment in a complicated relationship, because relationships are complicated, sometimes it's about saying, I need this, I'm sorry, this is what's, you know, I really need to do this thing. Sometimes it's important to say, you know, this is what the other person needs. It may not be, I'll give you a really prosaic example. Maybe it's like you're going to go somewhere or something together. So it's kind of like, you might say, I'm sorry, I really can't go to that place. It's just, here's, you know, just that it's not going to work for me. I don't want to do that. And then some other times you might say, it's really important to my partner that I go and do this thing. So I'm going to go and do this thing, whether I want to do this thing or not, I'm going to go and do this thing. Or this is a way just that you're just both supporting each other back and forth, right? In the totality of this, there's this give and take. So there's this way in which you have to discern what is necessary or what is helpful in this relationship. But I think essentially here about misusing sexuality from our own side, you know, we have to ask ourselves, are we allowing this situation to misuse us, right? Or are we in the situation misusing the situation? So this way that we can ask ourselves both sides of that question, which just comes really down to being able to discern what our motivations are in any given situation. To really be able to look, Dogen says, you know, turn the light inward to be able to look at what we're up to. So we want to foster and actualize these wholesome aspects. We want to take a stance. We want to have some notion about what we're up to. We want to have a criteria to be able to talk about this internally and to the other person. And we want to foster and maintain the Dharma, which is what this is. So in the Dharma, we are practicing with realizing where our place is, realizing the totality of the situation, realizing our difficulties in the situation. That includes seeing the other person, letting them take their place, and maybe, you know, also that includes the other person making mistakes, the other person not being perfect just as we're not perfect. So this way that we ask ourselves, you know, is this a place where it's wholesome to kind of let this be, or is it not wholesome? Do we need to say no, this isn't the right thing? Or is it a place where we want to be generous? And again, this is subtle. This is difficult to know sometimes, especially when we're talking about relationships, being in relationship. So so basically it's this way in which we, as I said, we look at our own place, we look at the other person's place, we find some reciprocity between that in a wholesome way. We realize that it's about give and take. We realize that it's this totality. And also I think we realize that it's not just about like two people against the world. You know, there's this way in which it's also the relationships are larger. The relationships have a larger impact that we have upon the totality of our situation. And I think I'll just stop there. And see what you all think about this. Thank you.